All right. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Gentle Healing. It's very good to see you. I have an announcement I'm going to make first, and hopefully I'll remember to make it at the end, too, if there are more people here. But I know that, you know, I always say I should take care of those housekeeping things first, because once I get into the teaching, it's kind of like everything else just flies right out of the brain. But the housekeeping thing is that next Tuesday night, I won't be here. Sean is going to be here in my place. And the reason for that is my mom is purchasing a house here in La Vida, and the inspection is next Tuesday evening, and she wants me there. So I'm going to go, which means I can't be here too. And so Shauna has graciously offered to facilitate again, and I wasn't here last time, but I think you guys all agreed to kind of pitch in and talk a little more so there wouldn't be quite so much pressure on her. And I'm hoping you'll do that again. So next Tuesday night, in fact, you know, Shauna will be physically sitting like 3 blocks away from me. I won't be far, but I just won't be able to facilitate because I'll be at the inspection. And we put the condo up for sale today, and we've already got a possible interested buyer. So we'll see what happens with this. Yeah. Maybe a fast and easy change or not, you know, just because there's one interested buyer doesn't mean it will happen that quickly, but it's not even up on the, you know, it's not even up on the internet yet. So it's a little faster than we expected. It's just talk around town. You know, this is a small town. Talk spreads quickly here. So last week I asked you guys to contemplate a quote throughout the week. Does anybody remember which quote that was? George.
That was quote 150.
450.
450. Okay. Yeah. I knew there was a 50 in there.
Yeah. Go ahead, Ron. You want to say something? No, I'm so glad because, 450 is the quote I wanted to ask you to contemplate. But when I wrote it down myself, I wrote down 451. I looked at that later. And I thought, oh, I hope I didn't say 451. So I'm glad that I just wrote it down wrong and I said it right. I would have felt bad for you guys if you had to contemplate 451 all week. That would have been a much more challenging. So I'm glad it came out of my mouth the right way. I'm happy to hear that. So quote 450 says, "The world and the I exist only as notions, not as fact, nor as reality." So does anyone have anything to share after spending some time contemplating that this week? Okay, Ron.
Yeah, it was interesting. I didn't contemplate it as much sitting down as I did actually moving throughout the day. And we were up in probably not too far from where you used to live. Asheville, North Carolina. We're up there for a day and a half on a little trip. And I was riding a bike around a bunch and walking around. And it was kind of interesting, almost sitting in a third party position, contemplating that, you know, or thinking about that when I'm on a bike or walking and just looking out. It's just a totally different kind of perspective sense. I can't say that anything particularly came to me. I don't know that I can particularly compare it to a dream at all. You know, maybe a little bit of that just before you go to sleep, things just start feeling a little bit different, maybe, but it was interesting. It was an interesting perspective to kind of put me in a different state, definitely.
Thank you. Does anyone else have anything to share? Yes, George.
That quote really ties in with pretty much everything else that we contemplated this week. The illusion of the world, the illusion of the body, the illusion of perception. And so I kind of kept that in mind throughout the week, but it really just seemed to tie in with everything else we're contemplating.
Thank you. Yeah. Anyone else? Shauna?
I have it on an 8x10, oops, kind of shiny here, a card which I put in my back pocket. And what I noticed was I could see, especially out walking around, I did the same thing that Ron did. And when I was out and about active, I would pull it out and look at it. And I could see very easily the world is an ocean, but the eye really wanted to not be an ocean. And at one point, it fell out of my pocket. I walked around the lake and found it on the other side of the lake. So that's all I wanted to share. Thank you.
Thank you. That's interesting that you say you could see easily that the world is an ocean, but the eye was harder. For me, it's the opposite. For me, it's easy to see that the eye is an ocean. It's more challenging for me to see the world as an ocean. Do you have anything to share about why it's easier for you to see the world as an ocean?
Yes, I have seen like the world is like a thin veil. It's not, it doesn't feel real. It hasn't felt real since I was a little girl. But the sense of I am sense really wants to be expressed as real.
Okay. Thank you. Yeah, for me, when I'm in meditation especially, but at any time that I turn my focus there, I can see that the I, whether it's the thoughts, the I thinking, or whether it's the sense of a me, I can see that they're objects and that something's aware of the objects. So it's much easier for me to see that as a notion because I can tell that I am the one that's looking at them. But when my eyes are open and I'm engaged in the world, and I'm not in that same meditative state, the forgetfulness happens. I don't know how else to express this. Then it feels like I'm a body in a world, which makes the world seem real instead of a notion. When I meditate, I always meditate with my eyes closed, and maybe what I should do is start doing a little more open-eye meditation, like get in a meditative state and then open my eyes for a while and kind of look at the world. That might be very, very helpful while I'm in that state of clear awareness, right, where everything is an object. It's just that typically when I'm doing that, my eyes are closed. So I don't get a lot of practice with the world from that point of view, and I think that's why that's more challenging for me. But I think I'm going to start trying to maybe meditate for an hour with the eyes closed and then maybe just open the eyes and continue the meditation with the eyes open and see if that doesn't help bring that same sense to the world a little better. So anybody else have anything to share on that quote? How about anything to share on anything? All right, then I will start with my collection. And the truth is I have quite a collection. I don't know that we'll even get through it all, but we'll get through whatever we can. But the first thing I just want to say, and in fact, I wrote down the exact words. this is what I wrote down because this is exactly how I was feeling in the moment that I wrote it down. I want to shout from the rooftops that you all are doing a fabulous job. And that came to me after one session of reading journals, right? I mean, that's just exactly how I felt. I really did. I felt like I wanted to shout from the rooftops. I am so impressed with the quality of the contemplations that you're doing. They have improved. Not only have they improved since the beginning of the seven steps, but to be honest, you guys have improved in the last couple of weeks, and I can see that. I've asked you to kind of go into contemplating deeper and in a different way, and I see a lot of that happening. And it's just, you know, it's just, it's marvelous. It makes me wonder how many groups out there are really going as deep as we are. And I don't mean that in a prideful or boastful way. It's just that what you're doing is amazing work. So I wanted to say that. I think what I'll do is start with something that Ron wrote and then something that I promised him in a comment. We'll start there because like I said, I have too much to cover, but this feels like this might be really important. So let me start by sharing my screen. And let me find Ron. So let's move this for a minute. Move you guys for a minute. There's Ron. And let's see, we wanted to look at number 482. By the way, Ron and Manuela both are doing some excellent contemplations where they are combining the teachings of Bernadette Roberts with their contemplation of these particular quotes. And really, there's some incredible contemplations coming out of these two people by combining that stuff. So that's a lot of fun to read. What I'm going to do is skip to the second paragraph right here underneath 482. Ron wrote, "I find it curious that many of the sages, particularly the Supreme Yoga, are really focused on the illusion or dream aspect and say either nothing or very little about what the experience of living on earth is like after the second awakening or after awakening to the absolute. It is clear that they don't physically disappear, that they still have the function of the senses and they can see, touch, smell, and can communicate with others. Maybe they find words too limiting to describe their experience of the marketplace." That's a term that I think he's gotten from Bernadette Roberts' book. We'll just call it the world. "Maybe they find words too limiting to describe their experience of the marketplace, but at the same time, they are still attached or have some symbiotic relationship with the food body or the food shell. They seem to be missing a practical element that life goes on, but can now be lived, experienced, whatever that means, to the fullest without the tight restraints or limiting boundary of consciousness, the mind." And then he says he hasn't gotten far enough into "What is the Self" by Bernadette Roberts to see how she lived this. So what I wanted to do was share with you Michael Langford. A few years ago, wrote to me in trying to describe this experience of the body after awakening. And I thought that maybe we would kind of look at that together. And to be honest, I haven't read this in a few years. I went and found it a while ago and pulled it up. It was an email he sent me. But I haven't even read it in a few years, so it'll be interesting to see if there's something I can understand in it now that I couldn't before. But he says, "Hi, Regina. I was listening to one of the Seven Steps audios today," and he's talking about when I used to teach from the Seven Steps. "I know the number of the audio. However, I will not be stating what the number is here because the purpose of this note is not that I want you to change the audio. Also, I am not writing this to you for the purpose of adding it to the commentary section. The purpose of this note is to clarify something. You might want to contemplate this note more than once because it deals with a subject that most people find very difficult to comprehend. The audio is somewhere in the middle of the step two quotes, and the subject is often no body, no world, the sage not being aware of the body and the world, etc. So you are talking about the difference in perspective between Nisargadatta saying he is not aware of the body or the world and other people seeing him talking, etc. And as you know, Nisargadatta had so many different ways of stating that same theme. You mentioned Ramana Maharshi being concerned in the kitchen about how the vegetables were cut, Nisargadatta appearing to be sitting there smoking, and Michael Langford publishing books. How can they do all of that and yet not be aware of the world? I don't know how that can be." So that's what I must have said in the audio. He says, "There is a common error in thinking that occurs. Here is an attempt to explain it in a way that I have not tried before. The error is confusing the levels." Maybe that is also an expression ACIM uses. Ramana Maharshi is the name of a body. That body is just as aware of the world as you are. Nisargadatta is the name of a body. That body is just as aware of the world as you are. Michael Langford is the name of a body. That body is just as aware of the world as you are. It is the self that is not aware of the body or the world or the universe. It is the self that has no body, no world, and no universe. The self has no name. The name Nisargadatta Maharaj, the name Ramana Maharshi, the name Michael Langford does not exist in the self. And I'll tell you what this is reminding me of right off the bat. Those of you who are paying attention to Bernadette Roberts right now, this kind of reminds me of how she talks about the pure sensory knowing, right? That would be the body being aware of the world. So that's all I'll say. It just reminds me of that. He continues, the bodies called Nisargadatta Maharaj, Ramana Maharshi, Michael Langford are just as much of an illusion as your body. So a question might arise, is there any difference between the body of a sage and the body of one in whom the ego illusion has not yet ended? Yes, there is a difference. Inside that illusory appearance of the sage's body, there is no ego illusion. I'll repeat that. Inside that illusory appearance of the sage's body, there is no ego illusion. Therefore, when the body of the sage speaks, it can report accurately about the self. An example that you and I are both fond of using is the prism and the sun. Inside your body is the mind illusion, the prism. Therefore, you cannot see the self or the sun clearly. Inside the sage's body is no mind illusion, no prism. Therefore, the sage can see the self or the sun clearly. The word sage refers to a body. That body is an illusion, just as your body is an illusion. So, it's kind of like, to me, I think he's really describing what NTI 1 Corinthians would call the empty shell. Right? The body here is an empty shell. It's not filled with thoughts, and certainly not filled with emotions, and not filled with even the I am sense. So it's an empty shell. And as a result of being an empty shell, there's clarity of truth, yet somehow the body itself with these senses, and you know what Bernadette Roberts describes as pure sensory knowing, is still able to interact with the world. But even she describes it, as we go further in her book, you'll see even she describes it as the senses learning to operate without consciousness. It's like, you know, which is something, again, I think it's very difficult to fathom, but it's really interesting to listen to different people try and describe it, because you can tell that they're describing the same thing, even though they're describing it in different ways, right? Or at least that's what it seems like to me. So let's continue on. A question might arise. What happened to the individual ego consciousness called Venkataraman, which was Ramana Maharshi's name at birth? Later, at Arunachala, someone else named the body Ramana Maharshi. But a question might arise, what happened to the individual ego consciousness called Venkataraman when Venkataraman's mind died? Here is an example to answer that question. Suppose you go to the last 10 feet of a river, just before it goes into the ocean. You put a stone on the spot where the river meets the ocean. Then you measure 10 feet from that stone upriver and put another stone. So now you have marked off the last 10 feet of the river before it merges into the ocean. Let's say that it will take 5 minutes for the water in that river that is between those two stones to go into the ocean. Every 5 minutes, let's give the name of that particular water in that particular section a new name. Let's suppose a name, say Venkataraman, for example. At the same time as you give it a name, you click your stopwatch. After 5 minutes, all of the water that was in that particular 10-foot section is now in the ocean. Now suppose that the water in both the river and the ocean is actually consciousness. Now that the particular water that was in the last 10-foot section at that time is in the ocean, it is only aware of the ocean. It is not aware of the river. However, everyone looking on it will say, the river is still there. I see it. Of course, everyone will still see the river. The river is still there. However, that particular water that was in that particular section 5 minutes ago is now in the ocean. You cannot redirect that particular water back out of the ocean now that it is in the ocean. There is only the ocean. People will still see a river. However, it is different water, even though it looks like the exact same river to the onlooker. At this point, the river represents the body of the sage. The movement of the river represents the apparent action of the sages. After the 5 minutes have passed, the onlooker will still see a river that looks just like it looked before. After the ego illusion ends, people will see the sage's body looking just as it looked before. However, the individual mind consciousness that was there before is no longer there and is no longer aware of a body. The onlooker, after the 5 minutes has passed, will still see the river water moving. The onlooker will still see the sage's body engaged in various activities. However, the individual mind consciousness has disappeared and is no longer aware of the body's activities. The onlooker will assume it is the same river. However, after the 5 minutes has passed and that particular 10-foot of section of water is now only in the ocean. So it's funny because I have contemplated this multiple times, even though I haven't read this in years, even in May when we were having our silence and satsang retreat and we were sitting here by the river here at the condo. As I was watching the river, I was remembering this and contemplating this. So again, what he's saying is, you know, take this 10-foot section and give the, whatever water's there in the first, right away when you mark off that 10-foot section, say this is Venkataraman. And it must be a slow-moving river because he's saying it takes 10 minutes for it to move. But all of that water, or 5 minutes, all of that water moves into the ocean. Well, that water, if that water was named Venkataraman, once that water moves into the ocean, Venkataraman is gone. Venkataraman is dissolved. And yet, there's still the body and there's still movement, just like there's still a river. But it's not Venkataraman, right? I think another way that I would explain this based on my understanding of this contemplation, those of you who have taken the MPP Buddhist class have learned about interdependent co-arising. Nisargadatta Maharaj talks about it too. He just doesn't use those terms. He describes it as everything makes everything. So the body, it appears, will continue to operate and be moved by the everything, right? By interdependent co-arising, by the code, even without a consciousness within thinking that it's the doer. And it's interesting how he talks about that 10 foot of water that we've named Venkataraman. And once it's in the ocean, it's not aware of the river anymore. It's only aware of the ocean, right? So, you know, I think there's probably not a perfect way to help us see this. But I think if we really contemplate this, especially if you look at a river and really contemplate the fact that the water has moved on and it's not the same water no matter what, I think that maybe what you can contemplate is that, and again, Bernadette Roberts is really going to push the envelope on this as we get deeper and deeper into her, that it is absolutely possible for the body to function and to operate without the I am consciousness, without the sense of I am the doer, without the sense of I am the one talking, I am the one thinking, I am the one, you know, building this or making this or putting this together. And yet the appearance of that can remain, especially for those of us who still have the feeling, I am the one talking, I am the one doing this, and we see the talking and the doing happening, we're going to assume that the same consciousness is that is in us is in that body. But we're making an assumption based on our current experience. And what, and again, what all of these sages are telling us, and they use different words. And one thing I love about Bernadette Roberts is she's, you know, she's somewhat ignorant to the things we study, right? She studied other things. And as a result of not knowing the things we study, she uses completely different words. You know, and yet you can tell she's in her own way describing the exact same thing. So I guess, you know, what this says to me is this is not a great big hoax. These guys are not a great big bunch of liars. In fact, I can't figure out what they'd get out of it if they were. And so this allows me to at least drop the accusation. I'm going to call it an accusation. That there must still be somebody there because I see you smoking. Right? It allows me to drop that accusation because so many of them are describing in different ways that the consciousness itself is has merged back into the absolute and is only aware of the absolute. And yet the body, with its pure sensory knowing and its ability to go on without the consciousness, is able to see and interact with the world. And the way Nisargadatta describes it, he says it's, and in fact, Manuela quoted this in one of her contemplations this week. He says, you know, the speaking is the same, my speaking is the same to me as for you growing hair and digesting food is. Right? How many of you get up in the morning and say, hey, 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 I grew more hair? You know, unless, of course, you're one of these bald guys that's using that stuff on your head, then you might. But most of us, we don't get up and say, hey, 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 I grew more hair, or or 3 or 4 hours after a meal, I digested that food pretty good, right? There's no sense of doership there. These things just occur naturally. They happen on their own. In fact, we don't even know what makes them happen, right? We just know that hair grows and food digests and the body takes care of itself. And they're telling us, you know, Nisargadatta and Bernadette Roberts and Michael Langford and Ramana Maharshi and all these other people are telling us that is how the entire body begins to function. You know, the publishing of books, the cutting of vegetables, the smoking and talking to students is just happening without a doer making it happen. Just like our hair is growing, our fingernails are growing, and our food is digesting without us doing that. I'll go ahead and continue because he says a little more here. The sage's body may look the same when it is cutting vegetables before the ego illusion ends and after the ego illusion ends. However, the consciousness that lived in that body before does not live in that body anymore. That river has merged into the ocean. The question may arise, why does not the illusory body appearance end when the mind ends? The answer is, end for whom? The appearance of a body and a world has completely ended for the individual mind consciousness. When that individual mind consciousness ends, the ocean remains as it has always remained, unchanged. Why does the illusory body of the sage appear to those still dreaming? Because they are still dreaming. In other words, we see the river because we're not in the ocean. Does that make sense? If we were also in the ocean, we wouldn't see the river. And again, this is exactly what Nisargadatta said when the man said, or I don't know if it was the ICU smoking conversation or another conversation, but I remember a conversation where a man said something like, are you telling me you're not conscious of having a body? And Nisargadatta said, you know, something like, it's the opposite. I'm absolutely conscious that I don't have a body, right? So, and in fact, he told that guy, he said, it's your I am the body belief that sees this body, right? That's the same as saying we see the sage's body because we're still dreaming. We see the river because we're not yet in the ocean. When the illusory body called Nisargadatta Maharaj says, I am not aware of the body or the world, he's referring to the self. The I is the self. Then someone thinks, I don't see how he can talk and yet not be aware of the world. This is the error. This is the mixing of levels. Nisargadatta did not say that the body is not aware of the world. Nisargadatta did not say that the body now talking is not aware of the world. He said, I am not aware of the body and the world. The illusory body called Nisargadatta is as aware of the world as you are. Since Nisargadatta is the name of a body, the illusion called Nisargadatta is as aware of the world as you are. It is the self that is not aware of the world or the body. Again, we're going to find Bernadette Roberts in her own way saying the same thing. She goes on and on about how the body learns to operate without consciousness, learns to operate on its own. So I guess what's occurring to me now is, you know, while we're identified with the body, let's imagine for a moment that we're like a headlight. We're like an orb or a headlight. When we're identified with the body, we are down here, you could say in the body, and we're saying, I am doing this, I am saying this, I am thinking this. So when that consciousness leaves the body, it's no longer associated with that body in that way, and the consciousness would say, I am not the body, because it's not. But the body's still here moving about, being moved by the interdependent co-arising, not by the consciousness. Nisargadatta had a different name at birth before they started calling him Nisargadatta Maharaj. I don't remember the name, but let's just use a name. For example, Devadatta. The individual consciousness mind called Devadatta came to an end. From that moment onwards, that individual consciousness mind is no longer aware of the world or the body, just like the river between the stones in the above example. As you know, one will never get this fully from words. I think we can all agree on that, right? However, one does not need to keep making the same mistake and thinking over and over by confusing the levels. So I think what he's saying here is, you know, we can't understand it, but we can accept it. We can accept that when you know, if we're ever in the presence of a body, there's a true sage that says, you know, I am not aware of a world. I am not aware of a body. That I is the self. but and the body that we are experiencing is the body. And clearly it's aware of the world. It knows when the body has to go to the bathroom. It gets up and goes to the bathroom. It does the appropriate things in the bathroom. Right? It comes back out. It eats food. And it knows. It even knows, I think, probably still which foods it likes, which foods it doesn't like. You know, again, Bernadette Roberts says the senses have a knowing of their own. So as you know, one will never get this fully from the words. However, one does not need to keep making the same mistake in thinking over and over by confusing the levels. As a temporary exercise, it can be helpful when looking at a Nisargadatta quote to say to yourself, Nisargadatta's illusory body said this. Nisargadatta is an illusory name given to an illusory body. When Nisargadatta says, I am not aware of the world or the body, he means the self is not aware of the world or the body. Nisargadatta is aware of the world and the body. Again, Nisargadatta is the name of the body. When Nisargadatta is speaking, always remember it is an illusory body that is speaking. When Nisargadatta says, I am not aware of the body or the world, he does not mean that the one speaking to you now is not aware of the body or the world. The self that is not aware of the body or the world has never spoken a word in all of eternity, and it has never had a thought in all of eternity. Now that's an interesting sentence there. You know, and again, it's not something I can understand, but I'll tell you how it hits me. It hits me as if because it's empty inside now, because the body is an empty shell and it's empty, that somehow this body can report on that emptiness and tell us what that emptiness experiences. You know, just like when I had a dog, this is a little different, but it's the same. You know, Jamie, I knew Jamie really well. And I could tell you what Jamie was thinking sometimes. You know, she had different expressions, and I learned those expressions. And I could tell you what Jamie was thinking. But I was not in Jamie's body. But I could look at her, I could observe her, and I could say, you know, like when Jacqueline came over, it was always funny because Jamie loved Jacqueline. But Jamie and I would go to bed usually around 9 o'clock. Jacqueline's a late night person. So when Jacqueline would come and stay with me for a week, we'd be up till like 11. And I swear to God, when Jacqueline would walk in the door, you'd see the look on Jamie's face. It was just like, oh my God, we're not going to sleep this week. And you could see the look. Even Jacqueline got to see it. You know, she knew Jacqueline, and she knew if Jacqueline was here, we weren't going to bed. You know, and I can report on that, but yet I wasn't Jamie, right? Well, the body is not the self. But if it's empty inside, the body, just like the body can see outward and see, you know, a tree and vegetables to cut, the body can peek inward and report on what's on that, report on the self. Say the self does not see a world. But he's saying it's the body that's talking. It's the body that's doing that reporting. And the problem that we have is comprehending an intelligent body organism without consciousness. In fact, Bernadette Roberts would say even Jamie didn't have consciousness. Even that recognizing of Jacqueline and knowing from experience that, oh no, we're not going to go to bed. That was still what she calls pure sensory knowing. That would be the same pure sensory knowing that Ramana Maharshi would use to chop vegetables and that Michael Langford uses to publish books and that Nisargadatta used to manage his cigarette business. So this continues. Again, let me read this last part again. When Nisargadatta says, I am not aware of the body or the world, he does not mean that the one speaking to you now is not aware of the body or the world. Right, because the body is aware of the body and the world. The self that is not aware of the body or the world has never spoken a word in all of eternity. And it has never had a thought in all of eternity. The above was all for the purpose of clarifying an error in thinking about a particular subject. Moving on to a different clarification. Oh, this is different, but I'll go ahead and share it. It's unrelated. The reason the seven steps to awakening uses the word awakening is because that is a positive and popular way of viewing it. It would have been far more accurate to have titled the book The Seven Steps to Manonasa. Or maybe the English translation of that, The Seven Steps to Mind Death. However, almost no human would be interested in that. After they have read The Seven Steps to Awakening, then they might realize that mind death is something beautiful and wonderful. It is the way to know eternally infinite awareness, love, bliss. And then I think he just says he's enjoying listening to the audios and watching my spiritual understanding change and evolve. And he always looks forward to the next episode to see what the character's spiritual understanding will be in the next episode. So anyway, I thought that maybe everyone would find that interesting, especially now that we're all in step two. Mind-blowing and interesting is the way I would describe it. Something we can't understand, but maybe we can understand that we're making an error when we assume that the consciousness we experience is also in the moving, speaking sage, right? Does anybody have anything they want to say about that? Okay, Ron.
To me, I think the one point I found the most helpful is, I guess it's been hard for me to put myself in the shoe of this, in the position of the sage, that when they're talking, it's also always, they're always talking solely from their position, nobody else's position. So it's impossible for me to know what they, you know, what that, I even use the word experience is, because experience doesn't exist. I think it's a different intuitive knowing, or, you know, the conundrum or paradox about this is when you have the second awakening, if you can describe it, you haven't had it, because it can't be described.
Right.
You know, it can't be experienced, because there is no such thing as experience. It's gone. So I guess that's the paradox that has to be kind of accepted on faith that's kind of possibly what it's like. But, you know, I guess the harder thing for me, as it relates to the body is still just autonomously doing what it needs to do. I mean, I get it when, you know, okay, you're eating, you're going to the bathroom, you're doing all these different types of things. Sure. But you know, going out and buying presents for your favorite granddaughter, which Nisargadatta loved to do, or going and have tea, like they have tea in the afternoon. Those are the things that to me, again, I think it's just an otherness that can't be described. And because otherwise I kind of get this autonomous picture of a blankness that somebody has really no warmth or personality or can really relate to somebody else in a human touching way. So I guess I think that helped me a lot in that regard.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. And I remember reading Dr. Jeffrey Martin's book, and he was with one particular person, and there were several that would say they had no more will. There was not anybody here doing anything, right? That was completely gone. That they had no agency was the word he used in his book. They had no agency. And he'd say, but it still appears they do. I mean, like they decide, you know, what ice cream shop we're going to. And again, I think that's the appearance from our perspective. We can't understand the no agency and the body just talking like a human and picking an ice cream store and picking an ice cream and saying this is the best ice cream in town. We think if the body is saying this is the best ice cream in town, there must be a person there. Right? And yet what they're all telling us is that's not true. And the only way for us to know what they're talking about is to go there ourselves. But again, I think one thing we can at least do is accept that when we project our experience into them, we're making an error. Instead of insisting, yes, there is an agency there. I see you eating ice cream. You know, I saw you pick out that flavor. You know, I think it's like I told Manuela in one of my comments on hers. I said I think we're into the highest contemplation that there is now. What we're really contemplating is I don't know. Tawanda.
You know, that clarified something for me, but it also confused me because I was thinking that the self was there for guidance, but if it has no thought and it doesn't speak, then what actually is it there for? And it's also thought that the self was more like spirit guiding us, but it seems like it's different from spirit because spirit has a thought and we hear spirit.
Right.
Right. So what is the self exactly for?
Yeah, well, that's a very interesting question, and I don't know if there is an answer, to be absolutely honest, but I'm going to tell a story. We're going to go to childhood stories now to maybe help us again understand. And this story is the one that's in NTI Romans chapter 2. And in that story, within the absolute, which again has had never had a thought, never spoken a word somehow, and I can't explain how, but within the absolute, this question arises, this sense of I kind of arises, which would be really the birth of consciousness. This sense of I arises, and this question arises, what if I could make something different than what is? You know, make something different than the absolute. And it says that when that question was asked, two answers appeared. And this was the first time there was something that you could make a decision from. One answer was nothing has changed. Everything's the same, right? And that is what we would call the right mind, or using A Course in Miracles or NTI language, the Holy Spirit. That was born right then. And the other answer was everything, you've done it, everything's changed, and that led deeper into the fantasy. That's what we would call the ego. But what's interesting about the way that story is told in NTI is you actually see a beginning of the Holy Spirit or the right mind and the beginning of the ego and the wrong mind. Neither of them were there before this question arose. So when we talk about the absolute, we're talking about that which was there before this question arose. And when you ask, what is it there for? I think the answer I would have to say is it's not there for anything. It's just the pure life awareness that existed prior to anything else coming into being or coming into appearance or coming into experience. And therefore, when everything ends, it disappears back into that same source.
So when you're saying, or when they're saying that there's no beginning and no end, they're talking about what existed before the two decisions.
Yes. And that's what we call the absolute or the supreme. Jesus referred to it as the Father or Abba, right? Mm-hmm. But it really is, it is before the Holy Spirit. It is before that right mind of consciousness that we receive guidance from. But the right mind of consciousness that we receive guidance from is the part of consciousness that is always trying to point back to the truth. It's the part of consciousness that in the story initially said, nothing's changed, everything still is as it is. See, it was telling the truth right there at that first point. But then this other point also rose up, everything's changed, you did it. And NTI says, we became mesmerized by that and went deeper into that. But this voice for truth, or sometimes A Course in Miracles calls it the voice for God, the voice for truth was born immediately. But again, the absolute was prior to that birth.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
You still confuse me.
Yeah. Well, you know what? I will tell you that, at least from my experience so far, the journey toward truth gets deeper and deeper and deeper. And somehow as it gets deeper, it's like it uses a whole bunch of kind of beliefs and concepts along the way. And then at some point it starts shedding them again. So at first it seems to get very, very complicated. And then it hits this crest where all of that complication has done its job and it begins to fall away. And it starts to get very, very, very simple again. So you're just still heading into it. And at some point, some of what you're wrapping your mind around now, you will understand fully. And once you do, it's going to begin to fall away. It's kind of amazing how that works.
Yes, be patient.
Yes, George.
I don't know what it is, but I do have a concept of what it's not.
Yeah.
George has a sense of not enough. And that's what I think falls away. Until we have that experience, until we have that awareness, we don't know what it is. But I do believe that not enough has gone away.
Thank you. Well, I knew when I was collecting all that wonderful stuff all week that I would not have time to go over it all. I have, Tony, a couple of quotes. I have Andy, a couple of quotes. I had some stuff from the RDA Journal. Plus, I had just a couple of quotes on their own that I wanted to look at. And the only thing we got to was this email by Michael Langford. But I think that email was a good thing for us to look at right now. And we're almost done with step two. In fact, since Shauna's leading next week, when I come back, I think we will be done with step two, or we'll be on our last few step two quotes. Maybe when I come back, it's half of step two, half of step three. But we are so close to the end. I think now was the perfect time to go and look at that email. So I'm glad that we did that. But I do want to give a shout out to Tony and Andy. Because I had things from their journal I was going to share as well. So I just want to kind of acknowledge that. And again, Manuela and Ron are both very interesting right now in the way they're combining what they're getting from Bernadette Roberts with what we're contemplating. Bernadette Roberts, in my humble opinion, is the deepest teaching that I've ever taught. I feel like it's the height. The height. The culmination of my entire teaching career. And so it's quite interesting to go into, but I do acknowledge that it is not everyone is ready for it. And so if you're not, that's okay. Just back up with whatever you are ready for, right? And stay there. And eventually you may say, no, wait a minute, what was that Bernadette Roberts stuff again? And you may find yourself wanting to go into it. But it's fun to watch those of you who are chewing on it now. It's a lot to chew. It's a lot to chew. We only have a couple minutes here. Let me just show you guys Bernadette Roberts real quick, because I think she's cute as a bug. And since we have a couple minutes, I'll just kind of show her to you. Let me get it open here. By the time I get it open, we'll only have a minute, but that's all right. You'll still be able to see her in that minute. Okay, while that's opening up, let me share my screen.
We have to talk about no unitive state. And to some extent, seemingly no God. So the shock of it isn't the falling away of self. We never cared about self at all or self-preservation. That's been far gone. But you see, suddenly, now where is God? You see, God is no longer relative. So, and please understand me. In taking, we don't realize it, but in throughout this whole journey here, our experience of God was totally relative to self. And not only that, but what I instantly knew, that what had fallen away was self, and that what I thought was God or experienced as God had only been myself. Now that's the shock of it all, and it is the truth of it all. In other words, all our experiences of God are experiences of ourself. They are our experiences of our own self. I do believe, however, that this little line here is a part of the site reserved to God alone that can only be touched or acted upon by God. So now this is the discovery with the falling away of self.
And that's an interesting little point, that what we think of as God, what we think of as the divine, is relative to the self. So when the self falls away, that God has to fall away too, right? It's an interesting point. And if you really contemplate it, you'll realize it makes perfect sense. Perfect sense. Okay, so that's it. Again, I won't be here next week because I'll be at a home inspection. But Shauna will be here in my place, and hopefully you guys will really be robust and contemplating this week and willing to share next week, so there's not a big burden on Shauna having to do all the sharing, okay? All right, thank you, everyone.